Conscious Curiosity SD, where successful San Diego leaders share their stories of leading beyond profit and are using the influence of business to positively change the companies and communities we all work and live in. I'm your host, Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership, a proven and powerful process for unlocking the full potential of the people and teams across your organization, giving you the competitive advantage in the marketplace. We want to thank our collaborative community of business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Business for Good, Cause San Diego, and Be Local. We're all focused on impacting our community of San Diego through the work they do as business leaders. Welcome to the show.
Much of what this podcast is about is employee engagement. As leaders, how do you lead in a way that enrolls and engages your team? We're all looking to create both a feeling of success and significance for our employees from the work they do. Of course, in return, we're looking for passionate individuals willing to bring energy, creativity, and their abilities to our companies. As you know, this can be a challenge. In this search for employees, are we missing a portion of the population that could fill these roles? In today's podcast, we're going to explore part of the population you might be missing in your search with Wendy Forkas. Wendy, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Wendy is the CEO of Adjoin, a not-for-profit that's creating limitless pathways for people with development disabilities and veteran families across California. Adjoin serves more than 1,400 clients annually throughout the state, ranging in age from 18 to 83 years. Wendy is also the board chair for California's Disability Services Association, which focuses on public policy to promote sustainable access to high-quality services and support for Californians with disabilities and their families. Wendy, you're very busy.
Yes.
Trying to help a whole special population.
Yes, when you're passionate about people, that's generally what happens. It's hard to say no when you get asked to do something that you know is going to benefit and help people be more successful in the community.
It becomes a calling.
Yes.
Not
yes.
A job anymore.
Exactly.
Well, maybe give us a bit of a snapshot of what you and your team are up to.
All right.
Who is Adjoin and what are you making happen here in the community?
All right. Yeah. So Adjoin, our mission is to create limitless pathways for people to belong where they live, work, learn, and play. And we do have offices throughout the state of California. And I honestly, the best way to describe it is anything that you and I do on a daily basis, we can help people access and be able to do all those things, even if they have disabilities or other factors in their life that make it impossible or difficult for them to do independently. So we provide services, and it's primarily people services, to assist and help them be able to live as independently as possible in the community, as well as to be active, engaged people in their communities. So we do social recreational services. We help homeless. We help with housing. We help with teaching them skills on what they would need to do to be able to live independently in their own apartment, help them with medical appointments, advocate on their behalf, maybe just help them fill out and complete paperwork that they need to do to be able to get benefits because of their disabilities. It's a full range, and we look to find new and creative ways of doing that that would reduce the amount of dependence that an individual might have on us. So we're always looking at creative ways of helping them be more independent and empowered so that if something happens and we aren't able to be there, that we know they still could access and be an active person in their community.
So this includes work as well?
Yes. We have vocational services, and we do that in both of our divisions. We have two divisions. Our Catalyst division is our division that serves individuals with developmental and intellectual disabilities and autism. And then we have our Veterans division, which is the division that helps veterans and their families who are at risk or homeless find permanent housing.
As you know, our audience, or at least all our guests, are typically business owners here in San Diego. So we want to give them the hard sell here today.
Yes,
Wendy, yeah. And yes, here's an opportunity to maybe hire some amazing people that could show up in a big way for you.
Yeah, you know, that is true. And through our Veterans division, we're kind of confined, I guess, in some respects of what we can do through the federal grant that we receive. But as an organization, because we are so committed to employment, we actually do provide a lot of support and access and training to the veterans that we serve as much as we can, because we know that by them being able to get a secured employment opportunity, that is going to increase their chances of being successful and being able to continue to maintain their permanent living situation. And on the Catalyst side, it is challenging for individuals who have certain types of disabilities to be able to be employed. And so it is very rewarding when we're able to help employers understand that we are there to help do a lot of things that if you are an employer, you would know is a huge benefit. We help train, we help provide support, we can retrain them, we can help with communication, we can help in just general ways that oftentimes when as an employer and I have employees, I really wish I had somebody that was a coach, right? Right there with the employee that could help ensure that the things that I'm, you know, wanting that individual to do, that they're there to support them and help them learn and make good decisions and learn their job so that they can be successful. So that's really a focus on our Catalyst side.
That's huge. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like, you know, employers might be a little hesitant, right? Like, am I biting off more than I can chew? But you're here to say, no, we're here to bridge the gap and provide the support needed to make that happen.
Yes.
Perfect. Give us a great story. What's your go-to story as far as, oh, this person came in, we had this situation, and we were able to make this happen?
Well, I'll start out with our Veterans Division. I think there's a lot of, you know, people have a lot of perspectives or thoughts about what homelessness looks like and why people become homeless. And
you're mostly wrong.
Yes, yes, they, you know, they are. And I have to just openly admit that I've been back with a join for 5 years now. And so during the time I was gone from the organization, that is when we started the Veterans Services. So I actually hadn't really done a lot of service with people who are homeless. So when I rejoined and, you know, took visits and met with a lot of the individuals we were supporting and serving and the people that we hired to support the veterans, I learned so much about the reasons that people become homeless that I had never even thought about. For example, this is the go-to story for the Veterans Services. There was a young single mother, had two children. She was commuting. She was a veteran, and she was commuting across the border because she couldn't afford a home here in California. So she was daily going back and forth between Mexico and California. And her children went to school here. She had a job here. And one day when she was traveling back home to cross the border, she got in an accident and her car got totaled. She immediately became homeless. She had no way to get to her job, no way to get across the border to where she could afford living. Her kids couldn't go to school and she had no support. She had no support that she could reach out to assist in, you know, getting a car, getting that replaced. And even if she was able to do that at that point, not having a job, right? And she'd have to find another job. So fortunately, she was able to reach out to people and found the services that Adjoin provides. And so we were able to help her find an apartment that her and her daughters could live in, helped her be able to get back into employment. And she then now has permanent housing. Kids are going to school. She can, you know, focus on her employment and sustain that ongoing. I'm just going to tell you, I never thought about that. I've been fortunate enough. I've never been in a situation in which I had nobody that I could reach out to provide support to me. That is like real, right? That we don't obviously understand the situations that people are in. And we oftentimes forget that things that we have and that are accessible to us aren't always accessible to other people.
Especially when you start going down that drain.
Yeah.
It starts to pile on after that.
Right.
One thing
I mean,
after another. Yep.
We've all been in a car accident, but how many of us can say that created homelessness for us? And so to me, that was just one, a super positive, you know, result and impact that our services had. But it was a real eye-opener for me to understand that homelessness looks different for every single person, and it isn't always the stereotypes that we think or that we hear about.
Exactly, exactly. As my wife says, who's in the homeless business, is like, these are people that don't have relationships. For one reason or another, they burned all the relationships, and all of a sudden, you have that little catastrophe, and that's it. I mean, now you're, like I said, then you just kind of spiral down from there.
Yeah, no, that's actually a really great way of explaining it.
So that's great how you guys came alongside that. Maybe give us a story kind of on the other side with a disability.
Yes. Oh, let's see. I have so many on that
side.
Sure,
you're not lacking for stories, Wendy.
No, but I'm going to share a story of an individual that was impacted by services that it is completely amazing. So there was an individual that I've worked with that literally was really non-communicative. They were in their, you know, early adulthood, 18, you know, 19, 20-ish, and didn't really talk much. His own family kind of described that sometimes he'd get very frustrated and actually kind of make animal noises instead of communicating. The parent really never felt that their child would be able to really do anything, whether that be employment or even just having kind of a social life outside of the home. And the individual ended up coming into a program. And through that program, through the experience of having other individuals and having the ability to be creative and putting pressure on them to meet certain expectations, it was, this is a creative environment and you can, you know, be creative. You can choose what parts of this that you want to do or not do. They really started to flourish, even though at the beginning it was a little bit of a challenge, but then just supporting, reassuring the individual that they were safe in that environment. And through the very beginning, the individual did not want to have pictures shared, didn't want to be in pictures, didn't really want their face anywhere outside of just inside that little setting. And at the end of the session, because it was, you know, a creative arts type program, I was just shocked. They actually became a director, the lead actor, and, you know, also did a lot of the graphic and artwork around the film, right? And I happened to sit next to a parent at that presentation at the end, and she was in tears. And she said, do you know, since he came to the program, she goes, do you know, when I come home and we sit down for dinner, he actually tells me about his day. And she goes, he talks, he communicates. And she said, I never thought he would be able to do that. And it's truly life-changing. He went from somebody that really had no communication, really didn't find that place or that niche.
How old was he when you connected with him?
I'm going to say he was in his early 20s.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, and
a lot of life has already gone by.
Yeah, you think about that. I mean, in schools, people with disabilities, they don't always get fully integrated into schools. And I think a lot of times they're fit into a model.
It's like the homeless problem.
That they don't.
You want one answer for everything, right?
Yes, yeah. And so just having this opportunity to be creative and to be accepted and have people around you that were supportive and open. And it was, I mean, there were peers like him in the program, but it was something he found that he liked and enjoyed.
Yeah.
And just to, he found his voice, he found his confidence. He literally at that presentation was dressed with a tie. He had his resume in hand. And that to me is really why I came into the field I'm in. Because it's life-changing. The quality of life that services like Ajoin provides truly can be incredibly life-changing for the people that we're supporting.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
So what's the backstory, Wendy, on you? What was the defining moment? What occurred? What's your story? How did you end up here?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, you're seeing this now, which keeps you motivated and moving forward, but how'd you get here?
You know, it's really interesting. A lot of people ask if I have somebody in my life that has a disability, and I do now, but when I got into this field, I did not. But I will tell you that from being just when I was young, I do remember my teachers telling my mom that they oftentimes would sit me next to students that needed extra help because I would help them. I think I'm just naturally like that. I really do care about people. I really do want to help people be successful. I think I have a lot of compassion and empathy as a person. And so when I went to college, I share the story because from like seventh grade, I said, I'm going to be an attorney. I'm always advocating for people. I'm going to be an attorney. And that was my thing all the way through high school. Actually picked my college to be an attorney. My first semester, I took my first political science class. I absolutely hated it. Like, it was super hard. I went from, you know, getting straight A's to struggling just to get a C because I just did not care
for
it.
Clearly, it was not your thing.
No. So I went to my counselor and I said, how many more of these classes do I need to take? And he's like, that's kind of your major. And I'm like, no, it's not.
Not anymore.
No. So he's like, okay, well, we'll switch you into, like, you know, liberal arts. And then I ended up taking my first psychology class and really enjoyed it. And to be honest, it was easy because I was very interested in it. And then I took another class that had showed this film called Harry. It was a documentary done by Dr. Fox. This was, I don't even want to admit how many years ago, a long time ago.
A while ago.
A few centuries ago. And he was utilizing what I have a major in, behavioral analysis. And in that documentary, it showed him utilizing these techniques, taking an individual who literally, in my opinion, had a very low quality of life in a locked facility, was literally papoosed and about 20 hours a day because he's self-injured and he didn't really communicate, had difficulty communicating. And so through this documentary, Dr. Fox worked with Harry and he went from being restrained for 20 hours a day to working, being able to work and laughing and being able to go out in the community and
similar
go
to your story.
Yeah. Visiting. Yeah. And I thought, how amazing that you could have that type of positive impact on the quality of life for someone. And that honestly was the moment I'm like, I'm majoring in psychology.
Sealed the deal.
Yes. And then I was just so fortunate after my graduate schooling that I did. I literally just fell into a job in this community, the intellectual and developmental disability community. And obviously, that's why I'm still here, because I get to do my passion
on a daily basis. Yep, I can see it. It's wonderful. So CEO, you say you've been doing this for 5 years, but you were with the company prior to this, right?
Yes.
Took a little hiatus to go see the rest of the world, I guess.
Yeah. Well, you know, the truth is I was waiting for the CEO to finally retire and step down.
It took a while.
It did. He was with the organization for many years.
So let's talk about this a little bit back to, I think, sometimes some false understandings of people like, well, for nonprofit versus for profits, like somehow entirely different.
Yes.
At the end of the day, the accounting is a little different, but I think all the work and activity is all very similar.
Yes.
So let's talk about that. Let's dig in a little bit. So you showed up, I saw this on the website when you came on board like 5 years ago and you were just mentioning the veterans piece that come in. And so you took on a project of like, oh, we need to rebrand and refocus who we are.
Yes.
Maybe talk about that a little bit. What was that journey like?
Oh, you know, it was fun, but it was a lot of work, but then it was complicated because of COVID. So I hadn't even been back as the CEO for a year when COVID hit. And of course, we were considered, you know, critical services. So we continued to operate and provide services throughout COVID. But I had the opportunity to go out and visit all the different offices and talk to staff and kind of do
it. So how many offices do you have scattered around the state?
Well, we currently have 9, but at that time we had 11. And one of the things that came out of that was that there was definitely a significant separation between the intellectual and developmental disability division that we call it now. We had those services, so it was already branded to the name that we had at that time. But they had chosen to rename, when they took on the veterans, they created another name and a website. And so they literally were perceived as two different organizations, and the staff felt that way. They did not see themselves as part of the actual overarching.
So when you came in, you could feel that was pretty obvious.
Well, and I'm like, okay, I'm a new CEO. That's a lot of work in general. But then now I'm going to be pushing out these new initiatives. And how am I going to get both of these behind me if they think I'm the CEO of this side and not their side? I mean, I literally had a conversation with somebody on our veteran side. And I said, oh, I would love to go out and meet with people in the veterans community. And they were like, that's going to be confusing because they don't know that name. They're going to wonder who you are, and it's kind of close-knit. And I was like, wow.
Confirming everything you believe,
yes.
Right?
Yes. I was like, wow, that's okay.
We don't need you over here, Wendy. We're fine.
Yeah. So then it was just, it made it very apparent that in order to be successful as the CEO and moving the organization forward and meeting some of the growth initiatives that I wanted, but also the board was expecting and supporting me in, that I really need to get everybody together and on, you know, behind one mission, and that they were one organization. And so through that process, I mean, we kept that in mind, that in order to get people to, you know, accept change and to get behind it, we did do a lot of involvement at different points of the rebranding and the name change and the logo change. We revisited our values. But the other thing was looking at how we could still bring small parts of their previous identities along the journey.
Right. You don't want to lose that.
Yeah. So, you know, there were things that people in those divisions really felt strongly about. And so we ended up making icons of those. So in the intellectual and developmental disability services, they loved the butterfly that was in our logo. And on the veteran side, they loved the dog tag that was in their logo. So we took those elements and we made them icons, and also, you know, brought the teams along in the journey so that they had some input and they could, you know, express things that they felt were important or that they didn't like. And by doing that and having them engaged, when we did roll it out, I'm not going to say, I mean, I want to believe they all cheered and said, oh my gosh, we were never anything but this. But the truth is, you know, many of them, there was some hesitance and a little bit of resistance, but they did have that kind of sense of familiarity with, you know, parts of the brand that I think helped people go, okay, you know, that's the same and that's still there. So it's still what it was before. I think the other piece is, you know, anybody who knows me knows if you really want people to get excited and to get involved and to get engaged, you need a little bit of fun. And you need swag. You need swag. So, you know, there was a lot of thought process on how we were going to do the internal reveal. It was very important to me that our team members were aware and saw our new name and our brand and all of that prior to anybody externally. This was during COVID, so it had to be really creative because we couldn't do in-person groups. So we did a reveal on Zoom and we did a whole countdown. I sent out invitations that they were VIPs or be invited to this special event. And then we created swag reveal bags that literally only about 5 people in the entire organization knew what were in the bags. They all helped me put them together. We mailed them out and we said,
delivered.
You cannot open these until I say it's time to open your bags, when we did the reveal. And of course, in the bags, we had shirts, we had sweatshirts, we had water bottles, we had stickers, we had all of these things to hopefully get them excited about the new name and that they could also wear it and be able to share it with, you know, their community. And so one of the funnest things after that was getting, like, immediately I started getting pictures from offices where all the team had put their shirts on and taken a picture and sent it. And then we also included our clients. We ended up sending out swag items to the clients that we serve, and some of them shared what they thought about our new name and the colors. And we did a video and kind of presented that to everybody. So for me, it was a challenge to do it through COVID, but I think it also helped create some very new ideas on how to keep people engaged and to get them to be bought in to the brand. And I think the other thing I really learned in that lesson, and I'm kind of glad that it ended up being this way, is when you're renaming an organization, you do have to have layers, meaning you do have to have a small team, and then you have to do some like focus groups with key people. But I was thinking, man, if I had more than the 3 people, me being one of them, on that committee, I don't think we ever would have agreed on a name. So that was something that
committees never really work.
I was super, like, I did a presentation on branding at the CDSA, California Disability Services Association annual meeting last year. that was one of my lessons learned, is keep the group small, but find ways to involve more people as you're going through the process. Really helps get people to buy into it in the end.
Well, I think you're just describing, anytime you're trying to create change, right? Who are the core people here? Let's figure out what this is and then expand out from there, inviting the right people along the way. I think it's kind of an interesting project in retrospect. Like, you came in the organization and you saw this divide, right? That got a left hand, right hand, no one's talking or whatever. To actually unite that around a project actually gives you something more tangible. If you're just trying, we all got to come together around this. Mm-hmm. Here you had something you actually could work on, invite people into, make it fun, as you said, and then kind of have a big reveal, like, here we are now, we're all together. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, that's kind of a cool way of thinking, because many times companies have different divisions or through acquisitions, things like that. Like, how do you bring people together? Too often people just go, just get on board. That usually doesn't work so well.
I mean, it does make it easier when you involve people. And then also transparency, I think, is the other key thing. Being transparent, and even if you can't have everybody involved in the decisions, you can be transparent and share where you're at and what you're doing, so that when you do have to get to that moment and say, here's the change, people aren't shocked. They're like, you've kind of taken us along the journey and kind of let us know what you're doing. And so they're kind of expecting at that point. It gives them a little more time to start accepting that there is going to be change.
Change leadership. It's coming. Yeah. Get used to it.
Especially
in this world of ours.
And you would think that people are utilizing those resources out there. You had kind of talked a little about nonprofits and for-profits and, the distinction or not. One of the things that might be a little different, not always, but a little different in the nonprofit than a for-profit, is that nonprofits tend to have very long tenured CEOs. Like, for example, the one that I was literally waiting to retire was in the CEO role for almost 20 years. Yeah. And then I had gone to another organization. That person had been in that CEO position for many, many years. You kind of have to wait for them to retire or make the decision they need to leave. And nonprofit CEOs don't normally do that, right? So one of the things that I did find is, for me coming in, I am definitely a new leader as a CEO for this nonprofit. And I've seen it happening with other nonprofits that are in our industry, that you have these long-term CEOs that are operating on oftentimes older models of working with or leading people, whatever that might look like, right? But then you are bringing this new leader group in, and they've now had the use of technology, computers, internet. There's so many things that are accessible, and that you start to realize could have such great impacts on, the efficiency, the effectiveness, just the engagement, or just getting more people to see the organization and what it is. And so I think that's also a part when we talk about, this brand and bringing those people in. You almost think of course you would do that, but that's not been the case. And my experience hasn't always been the case. And I've gone through many rebrandings with different organizations. And then the other piece, I think, is the openness and willingness to be transparent and collaborative with your other entities is something that I think is fairly new in this new group of leaders and this new environment, especially through COVID. We had to all kind of come together and realize it's not me against you. It's we're all in this
all
together for, we all want the people we support to have what they need and to be successful. And then I think the third thing that I think is something that is not always natural is, just having that work can be fun. It can. And we went through this whole thing, we were doing our values, because the values of our organization had not been reviewed for over 20 years. And so part of our strategic planning, which came the rebranding, we looked at our values, and the group that we had, everybody wanted to have fun in there. But there were a couple people that were like, no, that's not a value. This is work. But I think it's how you describe it, right? Fun could be a lot of things. And how we describe it is having enjoyment and feeling positive and good about what you're doing and you know, when you're at work.
I want to go to work in the morning.
Right. So that, I think, too, is something that, you know, people need to change their perspective on that and understand that you can have fun as a value and still be productive and still be doing quality services.
Well, odds are they're actually going to perform better, right? I mean,
yes.
People under stress or people aren't happy. That's not a good formula for high engagement.
Yeah, I worked at one organization and I was honestly very just taken when I had been there, 2.5, 3 weeks. And one of the long-term team members came up to me and said, I just want to let you know, I'm so happy you're here. And I'm like, well, thank you. I appreciate that. They're like, I have never heard laughing in the open area of the office, and certainly not as much laughing as I've heard since you've been here. And I honestly was struck with that. Like, who would want to go to an office where you could never hear people laughing? I mean, that, you can't do it all day, but I mean, that I was kind of stunned because I was like, I can't even imagine. I've been fortunate enough. I haven't apparently worked in, I know I couldn't because humor is very important to me, but
yeah,
it is. It's
that's
like,
what you bring to the party. So that's where it's at. So,
yeah.
So one of the key values that you're bringing to the organization is we're going to have some fun here while we're doing this.
Yeah.
We're doing serious work, but we can enjoy the work that we're doing.
Yes.
Love that. Again, most of our past guests and all that are all CEOs like yourself running businesses here in San Diego. If they listen to this podcast and said, yeah, you know, I would like to tap into maybe your contingency of folks, what does that look like? How might someone get involved with you?
Well, it's as easy as reaching out. You can go to our website at join.org, and we have a contact page where you can literally choose topics and areas that you're interested in connecting or learning more about. You can also call us here in San Diego. Our number is 858-292-2020, and they will direct you to the whoever or whatever you're wanting information about. And then I would also say that we do have a platform, path-now.com. And through there, we are also on that platform where you can go in and connect with a join literally through the application. And you can view all of our services, but then you can also connect and message back and forth with us about, you know, how we might be of assistance to you.
So anybody's interested in engaging with your crew?
Yes.
You're making it easy.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and I mean, you can always call me, and my number is 858-292-2024. And I get a lot of people calling and connecting, and, you know, I'm in this business because I am passionate about people. I love to interact with people. I was one of those people that during COVID refused to not, you know, come to my office every day. I had to, unfortunately, for some reasons, but, you know, I am a people person. So I'm always open and available to answer questions, or if people are struggling, trying to figure out how best to utilize resources, I'm always open to trying to do what I can to connect them to the resources they need.
Awesome. From where you're sitting in the world, lots of crazy things are going on all around us. What are you optimistic about?
Oh, I am very optimistic about the future in general. I think that there are so many positive things happening, many of which I touched on, that there's this openness to collaboration. I know some people are afraid of technology. Technology has so much to offer, and I'm super positive about how we can utilize technology to ensure organizations like mine are able to continue to be here. So for me, I just see that there's just a lot of opportunity in being innovative and maximizing the advances. But I also have seen generationally that this next generation, they are very focused about making good decisions and having positive impacts, and are definitely in many ways more focused on people. So that's definitely something I'm just super positive about and excited to see how things look in 10 to 20 years.
Got to put our hope in this next gen.
Yes, we do.
We did a bad job of screwing things up right here.
Well, you know, I think that there's a lot of factors, I think, that lead into that. And I just have seen, instead of being I don't think the generations are getting that push like our generation, my generation. I honestly, Jeff, I don't know what generation you are. I don't want to overstep that.
I'm the old man generation.
that, you know, it was expected that you were going to go get a job and be a professional and make money and have this, you know, position. I don't think that's the generation coming up. And so they're not necessarily
they
focused
on. They want a little
bit
more. Yes. They want a life than just a job.
They want a life. Yeah. And they think they want to do things that they feel are impactful and helping the world in whatever way they feel is important. Right. So it's not just about the money. I mean, they still want money, but they want it to be tied to something positive, which brings me hope, right?
I have a little meaning in the work that I do.
Yes.
Well, we got to put a bow on this. I always like to end up with, what's the big idea? People walked away and listened to this podcast. Maybe I didn't ask the right question. What do you want people to remember, Wendy?
I would like people to remember that being people focused, even in any business, nonprofit, for-profit, really, I feel, is guaranteed to help you be successful.
I'm on board with that. That's what this podcast is all about. Leaders are leading beyond profit.
That's right.
It's about the people, for sure.
Yeah. I like that somebody had said a quote, like, without people, there is no profit, and you don't really need a profit.
People are the engine, right?
That's
if you
right.
think about the people in your business are the engine, which has unlimited potential if you could tap into it. I mean, why wouldn't you do that?
Yes.
It just makes sense.
Yeah.
Give humans what humans need to go be successful.
Yes, and feel valued and feel like they have input and are engaged. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you coming in today. Definitely appreciate all the amazing work you're doing and how
Thank
you're out
you.
Here touching a population that definitely needs some relationships, needs some help. And the stories you shared were amazing. I'm sure you got thousands of those. So keep up the great work. So that's our show for today. And if you enjoyed it, please subscribe, comment, and most importantly, share the podcast with a friend. Again, special thanks to our collaborative community of San Diego business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Be Local, Business for Good, and Cause San Diego. We're all using the influence of business to positively impact our very own community of San Diego. I'm Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership saying, until next time, go do what you do. Go do what you do best, for we're all counting on you.